Good morning, delegates. We are ready to begin. Please find your seats. I am very pleased to call this session, the 34th session of the Codex Alimentarius Commission, to order. I would like to give the microphone to the secretary so that she can explain to you the functioning of the microphones, sound system, and other related facts. Madam Secretary, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning to all delegates. So for the interpretation channels, the floor is zero, English is one, French is two, three is Spanish, four is Russian, five is Arabic, and six is Chinese. So when you are given the floor, you press on the microphone, and there will be a time clock with the duration of speak for 2 minutes, which will appear on the side. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Madam Secretary. Are there any questions about the sound system? Are you all comfortable with the way it works? I see no questions. We will begin the formal opening of our session with comments from Dr. Maged Yunus of WHO, the Director of the Department of Food Safety and Zoonoses. Dr. Yunus, please.
Okay. I was just wondering if it's working or not. Excellencies, Madam Chair, distinguished delegates, my dear colleague and friend Samuel Nyutsi from FAO, colleagues, ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of the Director General of the World Health Organization, Dr. Margaret Chan, I would like to welcome you all to the 34th session of the Codex Alimentarius Commission. I don't want to preach to the converted, but just to say that food safety is a major component of health security. It is always in the interest of the public, not least due to the potential large health and economic impacts of events that affect food safety. This year, we have unfortunately experienced several food safety emergencies of global interest already. In March, there was the nuclear power plant incident in Japan following the devastating tsunami, which caused serious damage in the northeastern part of the country. Serious concerns over the contamination of food with radioactive substances, including seafood produced in affected areas, were shared among many member states. More recently, there was grave concern over the outbreak of enterohemorrhagic E. coli, EHEC, primarily centered in Germany. Although the number of new cases is decreasing and continues to decrease, over 40 patients died since the onset of the outbreak, and further investigation is still ongoing to establish the route of infection. Just recently, food and beverages intentionally contaminated with plasticizers, phthalates in the first place, were distributed to many countries worldwide. All these incidents illustrate how globalized the food market has become and how rapidly incidents in one country or one part of the world can impact all parts of the globalized world. This, in fact, clearly emphasizes the need for globally harmonized standards first and foremost to protect the consumers, but also to allow for fair practices in international food trade. Hence, the expectations for Codex have been rising more than ever, and discussion at Codex are drawing much attention. In dealing with all kinds of food emergencies, WHO closely communicates, coordinates, and cooperates with government authorities involved, our regional country offices, FAO partners, other international organizations such as OIE and IAEA, and experts in relevant areas, in order to be able to respond effectively to the concerns and requests by member states in a timely and efficient manner, and also in providing technical assistance towards the early management of the situations. During such processes of consultation and information sharing, the InfoSan network played and plays a critical role. It has already demonstrated the importance of rapid information sharing and communication among players and clearly substantiated the value added of working together. As you may be aware, WHO is engaged in an extensive reform process to help the organization adapt to the changing and increasingly complex field of public health. The agenda of reform focuses on strengthening WHO's capacity to focus on its core business, including setting norms and standards, promoting and monitoring the implementation, among other priorities of the organization. Health security, and in that context, food safety, remain high on WHO's agenda during this process. WHO is committed, as it has been over the years, to support Codex work and emphasizes the importance of a solid scientific foundation of its global standards. The scientific advice, as provided by WHO and FAO, will continue to be the key foundation of the standard-setting process of the Codex Alimentarius. This work needs to be maintained and strengthened to ensure that best available scientific information guides policy-level decisions. We also consider capacity-building activities, including those supported through the Codex Trust Fund, as being a major and highly relevant part of our work. And we will do our best to fulfill the expectations of our member states in continuing such activities jointly with our colleagues from FAO. In closing my short introductory remarks, allow me, on behalf of WHO, to wish you all a most successful and productive meeting and a very pleasant stay in Geneva. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Younes. Next, we will hear from Dr. Samuel Yutzi, Director, Animal Production and Health Division of FAO, and the Officer in Charge for the Nutrition and Consumer Protection Division. Dr. Yutzi, please.
Excellencies, Chairperson Hulebak, distinguished delegates, Director Younes, ladies and gentlemen, and colleagues. I have the privilege and the pleasure to welcome you all on behalf of FAO to the 34th session of the Codex Alimentarius Commission. I would like to echo what has just been said by Dr. Younes. 49 years after the joint FAO-WHO Conference on Food Standards has established the Codex, the need for international food standards is probably greater than ever before. One example, last year Codex adopted specific guidance to reduce the microbial food safety risks associated with fresh leafy vegetables, including the popular fresh cut, pre-cut, or ready-to-eat products such as prepackaged salads. The same guidelines also contain guidance on how to safely produce and handle sprouts. As Dr. Younes mentioned, in the past few months, there was a major food safety incident linked to these products, causing death, illness, and trade disruption. We will still need to answer important questions on this incident. How did the pathogen get to the sprouts and the salads? Are the existing rules not enough? Or were they not followed? And if so, why were they not followed? As always, when there is an emergency, FAO and WHO cooperate closely and have created and operate essential tools such as InfoSan and Empress Food Safety to foster communication, to coordinate the response, to help prevent that such incidents can happen, or to limit their impact. Whether contamination is due to growing conditions, natural disasters, negligence, or adulteration, the international tools are designed to protect people and to ensure continuation of trade. Journalists and activists speak of a stream of food scandals caused, as they say, by an industrialized, globalized food system, working at the lowest cost, pushing farmers and growers to cut corners, thereby exposing the public to serious risks. They speak of a global food system that is broken and call for a radically different model of food and agriculture. We take these comments seriously. FAO knows that as a knowledge organization, we need to be able to change constantly and adapt to new challenges. But changes need to be based on facts, science, and thinking, not on acting out of panic or opportunism. We also know that two things will not change. Agriculture at large, including fisheries and forestry, still need to feed all people on this planet, and this is to be done in a safe, clean, and sustainable way. Thus, no matter how our system will change, there will still be a need for guidance on food safety and trade, and for the Codex Alimentarius to be based on science and to be built on trust between all of you here in this room. This year, the Commission will adopt roughly 30 standards, guidelines, and codes of practice. I will mention only four of them. The Risk Analysis Framework for Foodborne Antimicrobial Resistance. AMR is a major global public health concern and a food safety issue. When pathogens become resistant to antimicrobial agents, they can pose a great human health risk because of potential treatment failure, loss of treatment options, and increased likelihood and severity of disease. We would like to congratulate the ad hoc task force led by the Republic of Korea for the preparation of the excellent new guidance text. Second, the control of Campylobacter and Salmonella species in chicken meat. These two pathogens cause the two most frequently reported foodborne diseases worldwide, and chicken meat is considered to be one of the most important vehicles of these pathogens. The burden of the diseases and the cost of control measures are significant in many countries. Codex guidance will help to control costs and avoid disruption of trade. Third, melamine. In recent years, high levels of melamine contaminations have caused illness and death. Codex developed maximum levels of melamine in powdered infant formula and in other foods and animal feed in a record for liquid infant formula. And fourth, labeling of foods derived from modern biotechnology. There are different approaches among Codex members to the labeling of foods derived from modern biotechnology. The compilation of Codex text relevant to the labeling of foods derived from modern biotechnology recognizes this and compiles all relevant existing Codex guidance in this area. It is very encouraging to note that you have reached convergence, if not consensus, on these topics and the many others I did not mention, some more difficult than others. I realize that you are continuously working on refining your consensus building process and to find new ways how to work better and more efficiently together, across borders, across different cultures and expectations. Transparency and inclusiveness in international processes like Codex are gained through the opportunity for all relevant stakeholders to participate in the standard development process. In this regard, the ability of developing countries to participate effectively in this process is of particular importance. FAO and WHO have established the Codex Trust Fund with the specific purpose of enhancing the participation of developing countries in Codex work. Being there at the commission or committee session, interacting with other delegates gives a very different perspective from just reading about it or listening to recordings. But we all know that effective participation goes beyond being there. For decades, FAO and WHO have assisted countries in building up their food safety systems, which lay the ground for their participation in Codex meetings. I would encourage you to visit the foyer, where a number of recently developed tools and technical materials for capacity development and knowledge transfer are shown. One of the session documents provides detailed information on FAO and WHO activities in support of member capacity development in food safety and quality. All this effort has been fruitful. Many countries are now participating in a more sustained and effective way, sending the same representatives year after year and enabling them to develop a better understanding of the process. They do their homework and come prepared. The Codex Trust Fund is now at midterm, and you will discuss the review and possible changes to its functioning. Codex food safety standards are the foundation of world food safety, and scientific advice is the foundation of Codex food safety standards. The relevant FAO and WHO expert groups are doing a remarkable job on this. They not only reply to requests of Codex committees for advice on new issues, such as risk analysis, but they are also looking ahead on emerging issues such as nanotechnology. The Global Initiative for Food-Related Scientific Advice, GIFSA, created by FAO and WHO to strengthen the financial basis for the provision of scientific advice, is up and running. Codex will launch its new website at this session, which is intended to serve you even better and ensure that the world can see the Codex works in an open, transparent, and inclusive way. FAO is continuing its reform process initiated in 2007. A lot has been done already, more is necessary, and the new administration will bring in new ideas. I am sure you have noted that the FAO conference has last week elected its new Director General, Mr. José Graciano da Silva. Mr. Graciano da Silva has acknowledged in his first press conference after election the importance of Codex as the world's foremost food standards agency, firmly science-based in its work. FAO has moved into a results-based management framework, which means Codex, as well as several other similar bodies housed by FAO, have a new level of accountability and visibility. As reconfirmed by the FAO conference last week, FAO will continue to give high priority, and I quote, adequate resources to Codex and to Codex-related activities in its program of work and budget for the upcoming biennium 12-13. The Codex Alimentarius Commission and its committees that bring all of you together here in Geneva and in many other places of the world is a unique place where you debate, discuss, agree, and sometimes agree to disagree, but always working to find a way to consensus on how to better protect the health of consumers worldwide and ensure fairer practices in the food trade. Let me close by expressing FAO's sincere gratitude to the outgoing Bureau of the Commission, Chairperson Karen Hulebak and Vice Chairs Sanjay Dev, Ben Manyindo, and Knud Ostergaard for their relentless work for the Commission during and between the three last sessions. Let me also thank all the other outgoing members of the Executive Committee, members elected and coordinators for their commitment and efforts to make the Executive Committee the dynamic body that it is today. And let me thank all of you for being here and support the work of COREX, and I wish you all the best in your deliberations and wise decisions. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Dr. Guzzi. And I thank both of you speaking to us from our partner organizations, WHO and FAO, urging us to keep our eyes not only on the future, but also to recognize that the future is built on today and the successes that we must accomplish today. So thank you for those words, the inspiration they give us for our work this week. And we will now take a short break, rearrange the top table, and proceed with the working portion of the meeting. Thank you, sirs.
Japan has the flag. Japan.
Japan, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We'd like to ask you to allow us to say a few words regarding the unprecedented disaster faced in Japan. We would like to express our thorough condolences to all people devastated in the disaster, who are both Japanese people and people from overseas. We will mobilize our wisdom to recover from challenging circumstances through collective efforts and thereby successfully overcome this trying time, with receiving much cooperation from the members of the international community. For food safety, the government of Japan makes an effort to ensure that foods contaminated with radionuclide exceeding regulation limits are not on market. On behalf of people and the government of Japan, we would like to express our deepest appreciation upon having received the cordial assistance from around the world. Thank you.
Thank you, Japan. You can be assured that our thoughts and our efforts are with you as you undertake what will surely be a long recovery, but ultimately a successful one. Thank you. We will take now a short break and reorganize the top table. Delegates, please take your seats. We are ready to begin the working session. Delegates, please take your seats. We are ready to begin with announcements by the Secretary on housekeeping arrangements and side events for this week, so for at least for today. So if you want to be advised of events today, please attach yourselves to your headphones. Madam Secretary, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, we would like to inform you that in order to give more space, the rooms three and four will be open during lunchtime because now it was not possible to do it. So that will be to extend the capacity of the room. So because of that, there are some changes in the meeting room. But first of all, I would like to give the code for Wi-Fi so that people can get internet connections. The username is FAO and the password is Codex, all in capital letters. Concerning practical information, we would like to inform you about the various side events, and some of them have had to change in the meeting room due to the rearrangement of this room. So we will start with the first side event scheduled by organized by the Codex Secretariat at 1 o'clock. It's a meeting with new coordinators. It's room 11 on level 2. At 1:30 to 2:30, there's a presentation from WHO on forced collapse, and then the meeting room had to be changed, and now it will be in room 5 on the second floor. All the side events, the list was distributed to you, and it's also available from the document desk, but I would like to highlight these changes. So forced collapse will be in room 5 and second floor. Then, of course, there will be the reception, which all participants are invited. It will be on the terrace in level 1 from when we finish the meeting from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. And you are all very welcome to this reception. In addition, there are some regional meetings we've been advised of. There are rooms allocated to the different regional groups for the whole week. That's available from the document desk. And we would like to highlight the room which changed. That's the room for the European Union. It has changed, and now it's room 6 on level minus 1 all week, except Thursday, where there will be another side event. And then we just had a notice from that a meeting of the heads of the African region delegations will be held in room 15 on level 1, and it will be at 12 today. And these are the side events and the change in the meeting room. There was another one. Also today from 1:30 until 2:30, there will be a meeting of the Near East region. It will take place in room 7 on level 2. That was on the various announcements concerning side events and meeting rooms. Also to inform you that there is a nurse on level minus 1. It's signed. There is an indication, and the extension is 9302. Other practical information, we would like to ask any countries who have any late conference room documents or comments to give it to the Secretariat by lunchtime today. So that was the last announcement, I think. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Secretary. Next, I have for you, as I usually do, some very brief opening remarks. 4 minutes, and then we will hear some remarks from a guest speaker. Surprise. So again, good morning, delegates, and greetings to you all. Warm welcome to Geneva, it's lovely weather, and to this session of the Codex Alimentarius Commission. I could share many thoughts with you this morning, but I want to focus on only a few that are urgent and critical to our work this week. Since we met last year, the world's food crisis has continued. FAO continues to report ever-rising prices for wheat, corn, rice, and other critical crops, and to sadly document the continually increasing numbers of people already poor falling deeper into poverty and malnutrition. High food prices are a problem for developing countries that must import food. And lack of harmonized food standards only makes trade more difficult for developing countries that often have only one commodity to trade, food. As you know, Codex is a joint program of two United Nations agencies, the WHO, the World Health Organization, based in Geneva, and the FAO, the Food and Agriculture Organization, based in Rome. FAO, which is the largest of all UN agencies, with programs that touch virtually all aspects of our lives, 1 week ago, as we have heard, elected a new Director General, Graziano da Silva, of Brazil. In one of Graziano da Silva's first interviews, he said that government should work through Codex to establish food standards because privately developed standards can become trade barriers. Other concerns about private standards focus on their lack of scientific basis, lack of transparency, and lack of inclusiveness of all stakeholders. It is very clear that if Codex can't do its job, then private standards will almost inevitably fill the gap. Graziano da Silva went on to say that FAO was created to bring about a better world for all people and to get rid of hunger. The new FAO Director General elect clearly recognizes the importance of Codex in achieving this goal, as does Codex's other partner, the WTO, the WHO, and as does the WTO, the World Trade Organization. Many of us are aware that the WTO is becoming increasingly concerned about what it sees as a troublesome trend towards distortion of the Codex core principles of science-based decision-making. This trend is backed by an unjustified focus, on nationally specific concerns and national legislation, which are outside the boundaries of Codex decision-making. Codex is the science-based, standard-setting body that the WTO must depend on. Codex bases its decisions on scientific advice from JECFA and two other expert committees. These are our internationally agreed experts, indeed the best experts in the world. They have been providing sound advice to Codex for many decades. We will adopt hundreds of standards and maximum residue levels and other maximum levels at this meeting based on their risk assessments and other advice. If we can't do our job because national interests distort our ability to make science-based decisions, then very serious consequences could occur. Codex could lose its status as the global reference point on food safety for all the world's consumers. And we could lose our credibility for protecting consumer health and ensuring fair food trade practices. And we would forfeit our ability to contribute to greater harmonization of global food safety standards, so very much needed, as noted by both WHO and FAO directors this morning. We will now hear a perspective from Ms. Gretchen Stanton, Secretary of the WTO's SPS Committee. Ms. Stanton, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't think I need to remind anyone of the importance that the Codex has for assisting WTO member governments in meeting their legal obligations on trade. And this is particularly important for developing countries. In order to ensure that the products that they are importing and exporting are safe, where they often do not have the resources to do their own safety assessments, they need to be able to rely on Codex standards. It's not surprising, then, that the SPS committee regularly discusses and makes reference to Codex and other international standards, and indeed it has a mandate to monitor the use of such standards. In the past, this has normally been looking at where there seemed to be a lack of standards and drawing attention to this. Since October of 2009, however, a number of the WTO members have repeatedly raised a concern of a much more fundamental nature. They are concerned about Codex's failure to adopt an international standard developed in accordance with Codex's own procedures, or that alternatively, a standard might be adopted that is not consistent with the SPS agreement. Now, the SPS agreement creates legally binding obligations on member governments, not on the Codex. And the underlying obligation for governments is to ensure that any food safety measure that they take is based on scientific evidence, an assessment of health risks, and is no more trade restrictive than necessary to protect health. The SPS agreement gives governments essentially two options for meeting these obligations. One is to make use of an international standard, of a Codex standard, as its national requirement. The other is to rely on another set of scientific evidence, a different risk assessment or different risk management decisions. By referring that way to the Codex standards, the WTO agreement presumes that the Codex standards is based on scientific justification, on a health risk assessment, and that it is no more restrictive of trade than necessary for health protection. If an international standard were to be adopted that did not meet these criteria, it could create an internal contradiction in the SPS agreement and in the legal obligations on member governments. In fact, the agreement encourages governments to make use of the Codex standards whenever possible. And if the national requirement is essentially identical to a Codex standard, there is a legal presumption that that government is meeting all its WTO obligations. But this is a rebuttable presumption. So if the national requirement were based on a Codex standard that was not the least trade restrictive, that was not based on scientific evidence and a risk assessment, the government could still be found to be violating its obligations under the WTO. And obviously, if this were to happen, it would seriously call into the question the value of the Codex standards. This is not something any of us would wish to see happen. It's important to recall that the SPS agreement recognizes that governments may want to rely on different scientific assessments, or that the level of health protection achieved by the Codex standards may not be sufficient to meet a national requirement. And therefore, the agreement allows governments to choose to base their measures on alternative risk assessments, on other scientific evidence, as long as this measure still complies with the basic obligations of the SPS agreement. It's a very important provision of the SPS agreement because it allows adoption of international standards based on risk assessments, ensuring consumer health in those countries that wish to use the Codex standard, while it allows other countries to adopt different measures. I want to say just a few words about the WTO dispute settlement system. It's a formal mechanism where any WTO member government can challenge another member government for violating obligations under any WTO agreement. It's legally binding, but it is also a procedure of last resort. To put it into context, there have been over 8,000 food safety measures notified to the WTO. There have been about 120 different specific trade problems related to food safety that have been raised in the SPS agreement. There have been only 7 trade issues, SPS-related trade issues, that have been examined through the formal dispute settlement system, and there has been only one specific trade issue that dealt with food safety where a government was found to have not based its requirements on a codex standard. And in this one case, the government did not lose because it was not using the codex standard. In fact, its right to use other scientific evidence and to take measures that were not consistent with codex was reaffirmed by the case. However, the other risk assessments that the government had put forward to justify the measure had actually reached the same conclusion as the codex standards. And therefore, they did not provide the scientific justification for the import ban that had been imposed. The codex and the WTO are very different institutions, of course. We have different mandates and different ways of working. But we share one very important common objective. We want to help governments ensure that the food crossing borders does not create risks to human health, while at the same time making sure that health requirements do not pose unjustified restrictions to trade. We need to always keep this objective in mind throughout all of our work, because our health and the health of our children depends on it. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Stanton. I would now like to remind delegates that as we proceed through the agenda, we do have a time clock, and for typical regular interventions on the floor, we will restrict the length of time any delegate intervenes to 2 minutes. You will get a warning with the middle amber light when you are getting uncomfortably close to that 2 minute limit. Before moving to the first agenda item, I would like to make a short announcement, as I do at this time every meeting, concerning the European Union's participation in this meeting, as it does in accordance with paragraph 9 of Article 2 of the FAO Constitution and Rule 2 of the Rules of Procedure of the Codex Alimentarius Commission. I have been asked to inform you that the declaration made by the European Union and its member states is contained in document CRD1. I draw your attention to this declaration. I believe it's quite well laid out clearly for us this year. And I see that the European Union representative would like to perhaps add some further clarification on this point. European Union, please.
Merci, Madame la Présidente.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and good morning all. We're very pleased to see you all here in this intimate atmosphere, in this rather small room. Firstly, I would like to thank you for having made the document CRD1 available, which presents participation and the competence between the European Union and its member states on each of the agenda items. This competence sharing is based on the integration of the European legislation on each agenda item considered. When the regulation of the European Union only covers part of the issue, the competence is joint and the right to vote can be contributed either to the European Union or the member states, given its level of integration. Pursuant to the rules of the Codex, when the representative of the European Union speaks to an issue on which the European Union has the right to vote, the position expressed corresponds to the position of the 26 delegations of member states present at this session of the Codex Alimentarius Commission. when a joint position exists on an issue in which the member states have the right to vote, this position will be expressed by the delegation of Poland, which is the president of the European Union in this period. Madam Chair, we of course remain available to give any more information required from any delegation present.
Thank you, European Union. Are there any questions from delegations on this point of division of competence? I see no flags. Thank you for your clear explanation.